Welcome to The Buck Starts Here, the podcast that digs deep into the juicy stories, power plays, and wild twists that shape the presidencies of the United States. I'm Kyle, and I'm joined by my esteemed and credentialed co-host, Eric. Do we have your diploma behind you yet? Have we gotten that mounted?
No. I have that in my office, so people can come look at.
Oh, that's right.
To look. It's actually, my wife put like both of them into one. Into one platform, so it's obnoxiously wide. It looks nice. I'm a fan.
Nice. Yeah. I like it. All right. Well, if you joined us last week, then you know that we've been... Well, I don't even know if it's last week. I'm not sure how this is getting broken up, actually, still. We're just recording these all in one big shot. But we've been going through all of the stories that have slipped through the cracks, looking back at Eric's notes in the past six presidents that we profiled. And right now, we're getting ready to jump into Monroe or Madison.
Oh, we're going into Madison.
Madison.
So I had two ones that I thought were interesting, I guess, about Madison. Well, both of them have to do with Paul. I think Paul Jennings is really, really interesting. So Paul Jennings, if you remember from the Madison episodes, he was one of actually him and two other volunteers.
Freed black slaves, I think, right?
So he wasn't freed at the time, but eventually freed.
Yeah.
Him and two other volunteers saved.
He was the one who went back and saved the portrait, yeah. After somehow, Dolly told him to go.
Yeah, which somehow, like...
turned into Dolly saving it.
Yeah, which is literally, literally infuriating because it's like, why did she's already the first lady? Why does she need,
right?
Like more kudos to her. So he, when he was 10 years old, Dolly was bad. I don't think Dolly was bad. But the first
no, Karen, we liked Dolly. I think.
We were pro Dolly.
Yes.
But Paul Jennings was, he was like 10 years old when he became like kind of Madison's footman is what they call it, but that's kind of like a servant, but like somewhere between like a servant and a butler for that. And
yeah, it's the guy that like helps you get dressed in the morning, like helps you shave and brings you your clothes, that kind of stuff, right?
Yeah. Honestly, like that's a good way to describe it. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah. But you become very personal. Like, you're around them all the time. You're not just doing stuff around the house. So he moves to the White House.
Imagine he become, like, a confidant almost to you.
Yep, exactly. So he moves to the White House, becomes, Madison's personal footman. But he served with Madison. And this is from Montepillo. Like, he was with Madison pretty much his whole life. He set the dinner table. He witnessed the British invasion of 1814. He's kind of this incredibly, interesting historical figure just because everything he saw. He was actually at Madison's bedside when he died when Madison died in 1836. So that's kind of where I went a little more detail, but kind of where we talked about Paul Jennings as a person during Madison. But when I was doing my research and I didn't dive into it, I started becoming a little curious about Paul Jennings because I'm like he lived a interesting life, and so I was a little curious about like who is Paul Jennings, right? And again, like what one of the things we always like to do is talk about these individuals as what they were, just human beings, and so he starts writing books and he starts he quietly starts this like very strong I'm going to say strong because it was vocal, but it wasn't like John Brown, but this very quiet push of anti-slavery, pro-abolitionist rhetoric. But I think what becomes really interesting is that of who he is. So he publishes this memoir, excellent writer. Oh my word. Like if you read the memoir, it holds up. It holds up.
Is this like one of the first memoirs?
It is the first White House, presidential White House memoirs. Yeah.
Really?
So it's called A Colored Man's Reminiscence of James Madison. And it's like reading Forrest Gump, where it's just tangential to these amazing stories. But also the way just an excellent writer, the way Paul Jennings frames the stories. It's very classically intuitive. It's written beautifully. And I think that's why it was a huge success. I think it's not just that people were like, ooh, I'm curious about James Madison. I think people were like, a really good written book, and it's about somebody who saw it. And we know,
do you think
we
Madison think, helped with that at all?
I believe it was fully written after Madison's
It was time. After? Okay.
Yeah. I think Madison helped in a lot of ways, though, Kyle, because I think he was very candid with Paul. now we live, like, you know, we talk about this, like, we live in a day and age now where, you know, the minute the president leaves the White House, there's 800 books published about him. But it's weird to think, like, you didn't have that with the first three presidents, because, I mean, they kept journals. Nobody's going to write any expose on on George Washington. I mean, John Adams, they called a hermaphrodite at one point, so I don't think there's anything. I think that's, you reach the upper limits of just, like, writing exposés. Jefferson, you know, he basically controlled, like, large portions of the media and his political party, so I don't think anybody's writing anything about that. But the butterfly effect. So one of the things that I was really curious about that popped up a few times is something known as the Pearl Incident. And the Pearl Incident, it was this event that occurred in April of 1848. So we are way past, way past our normal, you know, where we turn off the ramp. Sorry. So we are 32 years after Madison leaves office. And so I didn't talk about it during that show, but one of the things I was concerned about is that maybe we won't have another time to talk about it. So that's why I want to talk about it now.
That's a perfect time for it. Yeah.
So in April of 1848 in DC, there was this really ambitious slave escaped attempt. It's the largest known attempted escape of enslaved people in U.S. history prior to the Civil War, when you started seeing, like, a bunch of mini revolutions essentially breaking off on the plantations. April 15th, 1848, 77 enslaved people, men, women, children, boarded a schooner called Pearl, which was docked in the Potomac River. And they were, their goal was very simple, sail northward. And they were just eventually just trying to reach New Jersey, which had, by this point, they still had this institution of slavery on the books, but they'd become so heavily pro-abolitionism that it was effectively gone. And this was financed by a network of black and white abolitionists, including Paul Jennings. So it's kind of crazy. You think, like, the money he made from writing that memoir caused him his ability to finance the Pearl incident. The Pearl was captain. Again, we always like to shout out, like, these heroes, right? Daniel Drayton, he was a white abolitionist from New Jersey, and Edward Sayers, who provided the schooner. But they ended up running into this horrible weather. Like, I'm talking, like, they had to stay in port extra days. So during the delay, one of the slaveholders went outside and realized that his slaves were missing. And he, you know, then raised a mob. Very funny. When I was reading this, like, when I was doing some background on this, one of the things that popped up on an article I was reading online, so it wasn't like from a book or a scholar, so I'm not gonna, I just be clear with that. Like, this is one of those things where, as we try and tell these stories, which we'll look for a couple, like, you know, quick pop history parts of it. It was described that his workers were missing. The author, I'll give them credit. I'm not gonna flame them. I'm not gonna say their name. The next sentence, they went back to saying enslaved workers, and they just kept using the term slaves and enslaved workers. But it was a very clear typo in the first line of one of the paragraphs saying, I'm reading it right now, the slaveholder realized his workers were missing. And I'm like,
That sounds like somebody
none of that works.
Just didn't want to say that word too many times in a row.
Yep, he forgot
to cut it from the wrong spot.
Right, like, you just, like, control, like, a control F replacement, and was like, oh, crap.
It's a thesaurus, buddy.
Yeah, right. So then a bunch of, like, this huge mob forms that he raises. They go over, and they get, and the law enforcement joins them, because, it's Maryland at the time. They're in Cornfield Harbor, Maryland. So they end up catching up to the Pearl. It's in Cornfield Harbor, Maryland. Be less descript, right? Like, you're just describing exactly what Cornfield Harbor, like.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
It's over on Gas Station Corner next to
Taco Place Public Restroom.
Yeah.
So they end up they're about 100 miles from Washington at this point, and the passengers were captured. They were brought back in chains, and it causes this huge eruption in D.C. and the pro-slavery factions. But the abolitionist newspaper called the National Era was actually, like, attacked by these pro-slavery people. And it actually became pretty well known. There was tons of prominent figures involved in the planning and escape of the slaves. And it actually helped them flee. And it creates this, like, weird tension where it's like, I think this, and you got to imagine, this is a time, this is actually around the time John Quincy Adams dies, and he's breaking the gag rule in D.C., and he's being crazy. Mm-hmm. I don't mean crazy in a bad way. I mean crazy is that he's intentionally fanning the flames of this.
Yeah, good for him.
Yeah, because he's not a ginormous piece of crap. my personal opinion.
Also had nothing really to lose, right? What are you going to do? Let him not be a senator anymore? He's already been president.
Yeah, he's been a president, a senator, a rep, and nominated to the Supreme Court. Yeah.
The big three.
Right, like, what more do you need to do in your life?
For him, free the slaves.
Honestly, that's like, if you read him.
That was the one thing he wanted to do, right?
I do think that, a lot of the stuff, not to go on the John Quincy Adams train again, but sorry, I think Madison. In the long run, I mean, he wrote in his letters that, like, this is going to rip apart the nation, we need to fix this now. But one of the things I find really found super interesting. So, basically, the aftermath of this is that tensions really start skyrocketing. The 77 enslaved people, they're brought back. They're actually sent further into the South. They're not in these border states anymore. Drayton and Sears, the captain. Yeah, the captain and the guy who owned the schooner. They end up getting imprisoned for years. They get imprisoned for 5 years until Miller Fillmore actually pardons them. And then
really, Fillmore. I have to give him a little bit of love for that one, right?
Yeah, Miller Fillmore is going to be I think one of the most surprising ones we do.
Yeah.
So Paul Jennings doesn't get imprisoned at this point. Paul Jennings in his life is kind of seen as this like, he's basically a very well respected figure. I mean, but also the other part is that there's no illusions that he's a abolitionist. I mean, he was a former slave.
Yeah.
Like, this is, like, of course he's an abolitionist. I mean, you have to be insane not to be.
Right.
Interesting, like, butterfly effect here is that there is these two passengers. They were sisters, Emily and Mary Edmondson.
Mm-hmm.
They became kind of like the poster children, like, no pun intended, of this resistance. And after their recapture, their freedom, they were actually Frederick Douglass. Purchased them and freed them. do I love Frederick Douglass? He's on my top three favorite Americans. But
I don't think we really gave him much, though. He probably needs to get his own little episode one of these days.
Yeah, he's later on in history. But I think one of the closing interesting facts about Paul Jennings is Senator Daniel Webster of Massachusetts and New Hampshire. He was a senator for both. He actually bought Paul Jennings and freed him after Madison's death. He was like, wow, this is bizarre. I'm just going to free this person.
Kind of disappointed that Madison didn't take care of that himself.
Yeah.
If I'm going to be honest here.
Yeah, no, it's like we talked about in the episode where Madison's estate was so dependent on enslaved labor that he really didn't have, like... Yeah, but I thought that was cool. I think Paul Jennings is an interesting character, and it's weird to see the butterfly effect that... Who would have thought a 10-year-old walking into James Madison's home would lead to Frederick Douglass freeing, like, the two nationally recognized symbols of the resistance against slavery. Like, I think that's... I love the butterfly effect.
Yeah, that's... it's nice when you can make some, like, good connections like that, right? That's it for this dispatch from Loose Ends, Buckwild. Now, we may have signed off on the main episodes, but history's never tidy, and the Founding Fathers left behind more loose threads than ratified documents. Stick around, we've got more eras, more chaos, and plenty more bucks to chase. Please hit those like buttons, subscribe on your favorite platforms. We'll see you all next week. Produced by China Shop Productions.